Welcome to Jewish History with Rabbi David Katz, connecting the human side to Jewish history. For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidavidkatz.com.
Hi, it's Tuesday night, and I have to go away. I said to Florida on Thursday night, doing a speaking engagement there, so in Williams Island. So I want to see if I could finish up the basic podcast early in the week. This would be the number four. One sponsored by Mishpachas Stefanski, and I'll get right to it. I've noticed sitting here from my little vantage point in Kehillah Kedoshah Baltimore, Cox, Baltimore, just looking at the way news and things are trending, seems to me something interesting, disturbing is going on. And it has to do with what I would like to call more or less freedom of speech or political correct speech or things like that. Because the truth of the matter is, certainly American society, Western society, has depended for a long, long time on a certain type of political correctness. I'll say it again, a certain type of political correctness, which has undergone transformations in relative recent past, recent decades, and is now falling apart in some areas. What I mean is, you see all these demonstrations and things like this, by the pro-Hamas people and that sort, in which they're trying to break a certain political correctness. And that is, they're trying to make it, if you say you're pro-Israel, you're doing an Avera. They haven't quite gotten there yet, but that's they're working on hard. I'm serious. And if anybody's pro-Israel, they won't say it, just like a person wouldn't say if he's not pro-gay or something like that. They don't say it. Then once you get in trouble if you say you're pro-Israel. It's a major tactic on the part of the Arabs, on the Hamas types in this war. It's very ausgehalten and thought out. You see, when they march around, they have certain slogans and a certain discipline and their own message. They're being centrally directed. Now, I don't know who exactly is, but it doesn't matter. You can figure out. The headquarters is at Hamas and other Palestinian groups. That's what they're doing. And I'll give them credit, they're organized well, and they brainwash a lot of people, and they're doing their darndest to change the culture in America. Culture in America has always been that you may be for Israel, against Israel, but you're not against the right of Israel to exist. Senators, congressmen, newsmen have criticized this aspect, that aspect of Israel. Israelis criticize the heck out of it, Israel. But you don't criticize the right that Jews should have a country. But this is exactly what's being attacked all the time now. And the new rhetoric that the younger generations have picked up in the universities and other places is exactly that. And the Jews are buying into that. The Jewish people who march for Hamas and support in all kinds of different ways. Mindlessly. Because they don't know much about Judaism, Jewish history, believe me. But they think they do, and they know enough. And they know enough that the Jews will be better off without having a Jewish state. That's stupid. If that happened, you'd be in the hands of the Christians and the Muslims. Even President Biden said it wouldn't be safe for Jews. He's not Jewish. President Biden, President of the United States, has said, remarkably, he says, I'm a Zionist. I understand the Zionist argument. This is what he said. If not for Israel, no Jew will be safe. And I saw in the forward and there's other kind of left-wing newspapers. What do you mean? You're president of the United States. You're supposed to protect the Jews in America, blah, blah, blah. But they're stupid and he's not. He knows the Messias. Now, that doesn't mean we all know how the world runs. At the end of the day, You know, Lev Sarn B'Yad Hashem and all that, that's true. But you can't walk blind off a cliff and say Lev Sarn B'Yad Hashem. You can't walk across, you know, the Beltway in Baltimore or the FDR Drive and say Lev Sarn B'Yad Hashem at B'tochen. You have to do what ishtadlus you can. That's what you're supposed to do. All the ishtadlus you can. And then you have to use Paul that the ishtadlus should work. And so what's going on now is they're going away from the idea Israel did this and that wrong. Even if Israel did nothing wrong, I see this in the rhetoric. I see this in the debates. I see this in the chants. I see this in the interviews. Even if Israel did nothing wrong and gave $1 million to everybody in Gaza, it still wouldn't have a right to exist. You see? That's what they're trying to make it. And little by little, they're gaining traction among American lawmakers. I see in Maryland here, some idiot introduced a bill anti-Israel into the state legislature. I'm sure it's going to happen in 50 states. There are cities, as you know, that say we want a ceasefire now. What the heck does hockey, walkie, pookie, mookie in the middle of Mississippi, Tennessee, Montana, the city council is introducing a resolution that should be a ceasefire in the war in Gaza. Not a ceasefire in Ukraine, and not that North Korea should disarm, and not that 100 other things should happen, but dafka this. It's a message discipline, and it's highly controlled, and people are following it, and the Jews and the others don't exactly know how to react. That's the sad part. The history of America has been, for a long, long time, that constitutionally you can say whatever you want. A person has the right to stand up and they do in the Constitution and say, I hate all Jews, I hate all black people, I hate all Chinamen, I hate this and that and the other. You can't do speech that calls for violence. And truth of the matter, that's a new thing also. It used to be that you could say a lot of things that might lead to violence up to a certain point, but we've gotten stricter on that. That's what it used to be. You could say whatever you want. And there were people that did. On the other hand, it was against the American culture to talk like that. You understand? And the leaders of America, the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant leaders of America of yesteryear, always understood that anti-Semitism, for example, is something that can get out of hand. And, you know, you got to make sure it doesn't go out of hand. It may be that causes for anti-Semitism, they felt, were sometimes understandable. But we have to take measures as wise policy to make sure it doesn't go that way. And so whatever people thought, you didn't go and say it out loud. And because you didn't say it out loud, it had much less of an effect. Because what's out there on the media has a much bigger power than if it's not. You know, 100 years ago, you had Henry Ford, and he tried to break this taboo. Henry Ford, by publishing a newspaper that he distributed throughout all of his car dealerships all over the country, attacking the Jews. They're the source of all the trouble. It's mamash Hitlerism. Matter of fact, Hitler, I don't know if I ever said this before in podcast, Hitler dedicated Mein Kampf to Henry Ford. Look it up. Now, Henry Ford had the right to say whatever he wants. He had the right to blame everything wrong in America on the Jews. He didn't say kill him, but he said everything short of that. What happened at that time was that all the leading WASPs in America, starting from President of the United States down, issued a famous petition, I'm sure I've talked about in the past, in which they said, don't listen to this. This is un-American. It should be discountenance, and we feel it's wrong. One second, let me see if I can find it. Okay, here it is, I found it. So Henry Ford started this whole business where he basically said like this, you know, it's okay to attack the Jews. I mean, to come out with anti-Semitic stuff. He didn't say kill them or attack them. It was just short of that. Everybody can understand what's going on. And believe me, it started to spread. And so a certain guy, that wasn't Jewish, got a petition together from all the leading Americans. This is 100 years ago. America was a different country. It was a white, Anglo-Saxon, Protestant country with an elite. And these guys were the machers and movers and shakers. And these guys, who didn't necessarily love Jews, that's my point. came out of a famous public letter, January 17, 1921, New York Times. It spread over the country. Whereas there's an open letter signed by 119 outstanding... This is what they wrote, not me. An open letter signed by 119 outstanding Gentile citizens. The undersigned, citizens of Gentile birth and Christian faith, view with profound regret and disapproval the appearance in this country of what is apparently an organized campaign of anti-Semitism conducted in close conformity to and cooperation with similar campaigns in Europe. Isn't that something? Sounds like 2024, but it's 1921. We regret exceedingly the publication of a number of book pamphlets and newspaper articles, in other words, Henry Ford, designed to foster distrust and suspicions of our fellow citizens of Jewish ancestry and faith, distrust and suspicion of their loyalty and patriotism. These publications, to which wide circulation has been given, are thus introducing into our national political life a new and dangerous spirit. Doesn't that sound like nowadays? A spirit, one is at wholly at variance with our traditions and ideals and subversive of our system of government. American citizenship and American democracy are thus challenged and menaced. We protest against this organized campaign of prejudice and hatred, and especially because we are convinced that it is wholly incompatible with loyal and intelligent American citizenship. The logical outcome of the success of such a campaign must necessarily mean the division of our citizens along racial and religious lines, and ultimately the introduction of religious tests and qualifications to determine citizenship. It's remarkable. The loyalty and patriotism of our fellow citizens of the Jewish faith is equal to that of any part of our people and requires no defense at our hands. From the foundation of this republic down to the First World War, that was 100 years ago, men and women of Jewish ancestry and faith have taken an honorable part in building up this great nation and maintaining its prestige and honor among the nations of the world. There is not the slightest justification, therefore, for a campaign of anti-Semitism in this country. Anti-Semitism is almost invariably associated with lawlessness and with brutality and injustice. Is this not what we've been seeing in this country, in America, since October 7th, on the campuses and on streets elsewhere? Now, again, it is invariably found, they said, closely intertwined with other sinister forces, particularly those which are corrupt, reactionary, and oppressive, like Russia. So the more the past, the more things change, the more they say the same, I say. We believe, they said, it should not be left to men and women of Jewish faith to fight this evil, but that it is in a very special sense the duty of citizens who are not Jews by ancestry or faith. We therefore make earnest protest against this vicious propaganda, and we call upon our fellow citizens of Gentile birth and Christian faith to unite their efforts to ours, to the end that it might be crushed. In particular, we call upon those who are the molders of public opinion, the clergy and ministers of all Christian churches, publicists, teachers, editors, and statesmen, to strike at this un-American and un-Christian agitation. And it's signed by 120 people, starting with Woodrow Wilson and William Howard Taft, the two presidents of the United States, the president and former, and then by Cardinal O'Donnell, who was a leading Catholic guy. Then a whole bunch of names that you wouldn't recognize, but I do. These were the big mockers in American society of yesteryear. William James Bryan, Clarence Darrow, Mellon, these guys. And by the way, it had an effect. And it put a big dent in the Henry Ford things, and it made politically incorrect. Now, he could try to say, his stuff, but it was discountenanced, okay? Now, what really put him out of business in terms of anti-Semitism was when a Jewish lawyer who had no Yiddishkeit background, I think his name was Shapiro, sued him. And it was going to lose the case. In order to avoid paying a lot of money, he issued an apology, Henry Ford. But I'm just trying to show you that he was trying to make it that's politically correct to be anti-Semitic, and it didn't work, Baruch Hashem. That doesn't mean that there wasn't any anti-Semitism. And many of these same guys, it's interesting to me, who signed this petition were in favor a few years later of making sure that they passed the 1924 Act for the quotas, not to let any more Jews in, and to have quotas in the colleges like Harvard and the other Ivy League schools. But they said, and they meant it in their way, that they don't want too many in order not to make anti-Semitism. Maybe too many Jews, it'll cause anti-Semitism. That's the way they felt. And I know it sounds funny to us, but I hear the Vart. In other words, they didn't mean that we're out, you know, to destroy the Jews. We don't want things to get into a situation where anti-Semitism will build up. It's very interesting. That's why FDR, for example, was in favor of quotas in the colleges, even though I wouldn't call him anti-Semitic, despite all they hear in these you know, articles in Mishpacha or whatever. He certainly was not anti-Semitic. But on the other hand, he was socially anti-Semitic. Ad kedikach, if there are too many Jews around, and if 50%, 60% of the universities will be run by will be Jewish kids, you can't help it. That's going to turn people off. Azekaitis. Now, a liberal nowadays will say in the second half of the 20th century, certainly the last third of the 20th century, there was, I'm shocked anybody can have any kind of prejudice. Well, that's bull. These people have it. The question is whether you say it. Okay? And if you even think it, you're, you know, going to be a chai misa. Life isn't like that. The question is, what do people do? And the U.S., with all of its faults, protected the Jews in the 20th century. Even in the first half of the 20th century, protect the American Jews. I know Roosevelt didn't protect the European Jews, but he was not mechuyev to do so. Right? You wouldn't bend yourself out, you know, for him. It's, I know these things are said all the time, and my parents were in the war, all the rest of it. But a lot of it's baloney. And this kind of suppression, putting anti-Semitism into the area of politically incorrect, was applied because in the 1930s, after Henry Ford, you had Father Coughlin, who was what I would call an anti-Semitic Rush Limbaugh. Rush Limbaugh was not anti-Semitic at all. And Father Coughlin was, and he had that kind of a radio listenership. And he stirred up a lot of anti-Semitism in this country. Oh boy, it was bad news. And people were beat up here and there. But he said, I'm just told the way I see it. And I'll repeat, he had a constitutional right to say this and criticize the Jews. And blame. He has a right under the Constitution to blame them for everything. And boy, did he. The only thing the government could do at the end, which proved very effective, was to take away his radio license and not deliver his magazines. You understand? In other words, the Constitution says you can say whatever you want, but the government is not mechuyev to deliver your mail. That's not a constitutional right. And the government, sure as heck, is not mechuyev to give you a license to have a radio station. Roosevelt put in the Federal Communications Commission, FCC, and then they got a license everything, which has been good. So the government's not going to give somebody who speaks, you know, anti-Semitism or other forms of hatred. And so even though it's a free country, but the fact of the matter is, if you can't talk to your followers realistically, then you're like helpless. And that's good. We wanted these guys, these momsers, to be helpless. And it was a very effective, because nobody could get his magazine, wasn't delivered. And nobody could listen to his speeches on the radio because they didn't have radio. They took away his radio license. And that's the way it was for many decades. I've said this before. When I was growing up in what Jews now sadly are calling the Golden Age, you had three TV stations, and two of them were owned by Jews, by the way. You know, CBS, NBC, and ABC. And for sure, no anti-Semitism. I mean, they didn't have quality stuff on the TV world. I mean, everybody knows, as Kennedy's guy said, a TV is like a vast wasteland, you know, in terms of your sitcoms and other shows and stuff like that. But the icker is, you never saw things on TV against black people, against this group, against that group, and certainly not against Jews, right? Maybe Jews were portrayed a little silly, vapidly for someone like myself, you know, but no, it wasn't from, but it wasn't anti, it wasn't racist. And so there were racists and anti-Semites in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and so forth. There were. But most of us didn't know who they are. The FBI and those guys knew. And they couldn't get their word out except for a small group. The game changer has been, of course, the internet. Plus, what? Because now you don't control what anybody says. People say the worst things. We haven't reached a point which needs to be that the government should somehow or other censor the internet. I don't know how that could be. I don't know how that could happen. But I'll tell you again, you know, total unvarnished free speech in public arena is turning out to be terrible. Okay? I like free speech as much as the next guy, but not the ability to spread hate speech, you know, virally. And that's what the internet has done. And the worst part about it is a lot of Jews own the big internet companies, but all they care about is the bucks. So even as they spread all this poison and turn people against you, as long as they get their money, they don't care. It's it's pretty sad. It's remarkable. It's pretty sad. So that's what happened with Henry Ford. That's what happened with Father Coughlin. But now we've introduced the fact you have a lot of Muslims and others moving into the country who are pro-Hamas. They buy the Palestinian narrative. They want Israel to be wiped out. And they have been pushing more and more. They never did agree that you shouldn't criticize Israel or criticize Israel's existence or things like this, which is part of the political correctness. You never had a show where a guy said Israel doesn't have the right to exist. Not that I remember, you know, growing up. People could criticize, you know, this part of Israeli policy, that part of Israel. I get that, you know. But it was always within the Dalai Lama said, you know, Israel's a country. We're in favor, let's say, for example, of a two-state solution, somebody would say, or Israel should do this. Or should, not that Israel b'chlal should be wiped out because it was illegitimate from day one. And therefore, tomorrow, these people advocate, Israel should go out of business. The Jews should simply surrender and leave and get on boats and go to some other country that'll take them in. If no other country will take them in, heck with them. You know what I'm saying? They don't care. In fact, they would like them all to die. That kind of approach, which is sweeping the country now, and sweeping the world, because it's centrally directed, you know, pro-Hamas stuff, and many Jews are into it, whether they realize it consciously or they're useful idiots. They're mamash marching under these slogans. I mean, if they say now, ceasefire now, what they really mean, ceasefire now, if you think about it, is Hamas should win. So think about the result of that. Hamas should win. Not only will Israel be defeated, but they reserve the right to go back and attack us again. Well, they'll say they are right to attack you again. And they are all right to commit atrocities because you have no right to exist. This kind of stuff, which was beyond the pale in speech, is now not beyond the pale. Matter of fact, they're working day and night. I mean, literally day and night to make this the new PC, new political correct. And believe me, in next elections coming up this year, lots and lots of candidates will try to waffle. You think Israel has a right to exist, not a right to bash, mack, attack, you know. I'm in favor of peace in the Middle East. You know, they'll talk like that. And I don't know which way it's going to go. You're going to need to have a very smart AIPAC in those kind of organizations. I have to be really on the ball. And I don't know if they are. So we're in a new state, new stage. And where it's headed for, let me put it this way. It is piggyback on what I would call the Trump cultural phenomenon. Now, I'm not blaming Donald Trump, because I'm not. But he got popular, and this is just my own cheshbon, my own opinion, by challenging what's happened in the last 30, 40 years, in which the leftists, the liberals, the hard liberals, try to take this idea of certain things you can't say in public, like hurt Jews, hurt black people, hurt this group, hurt that group, which was part of the regular consensus, extend it to say you can't say this, you can't say that, you can't say anything about gays, you can't say anything about gender, if you can't say that it's okay to be white, you can't say that. You know, notice they're creating new categories all the time. You see? You can't be against abortion. Whatever the case, they're trying to make it, you can't be this. And for a long time, the public took it until some guy like Trump came along and said, I'm challenging this. And all the things they say are politically incorrect, I'm saying it. And he got tremendous popularity, even though people know he's a jerk. The voters know he ain't no Tadi Gomer. right? And they know all of his faults. Alpha B. Kane, they say, I want to do for this guy because I want to stick it to the people trying to make me, you know, not be able to say what I want on this or that and the other. You know, the average guy wants to say, I want to say Merry Christmas. Don't tell me you can't do that. That's who they are. So the anti-Semites are piggybacking on that and saying, right, just like it's okay to say, Achveis, you're in favor of this or against that. It's also over. It's okay to say that Israel shouldn't exist. And the day after they finish with this, the next line will be like this. What's wrong with being anti-Semitic? What if I hold the Jews are the cause of all the troubles in the world? What if that's what I really hold? How can you tell me not to say it? You get it? So notice that's a Hitlerian kind of process in which you're using constitutional liberties, which were always understood to be within certain limitations. And you're challenging them and using them to promote exterminationist ideas. And all these people marching against Israel would love to come out and say what they really want, which is kill all the Jews. That's what I think. Maybe the Jewish people who march with them don't realize that, but they will in time. I hope I'm wrong, but they will in time. And so we're living through a time in which the very principles of speech and rhetoric are being challenged and are being directed in a very interesting and dangerous direction to make it okay to come out and be like another Hitler. And it's okay to advocate that. And the idea will be like this. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm telling you what I think. So become part of the public fair. And then we're gehacked at Tzaras. So I don't know exactly how to fight it. But the Jews have to come up with some way to hit that back hard. I like the idea that they said we won't hire you if you march against for Hamas. That hits them in the pocket. A lot of people care about that. At least in the short run, at least you're doing something. And you see a lot of these protest groups are saying, it's not fair to out me. I don't know what the word is. Is it doxing or something like that? They try to cover their faces with masks and things like that. Because they're tuck afraid of that. You have to pay a price. They want a situation in which they can say whatever hate speech they want against us and not pay a price. That's like the Hitler system. Attack the Jews and there's no downside. You have to create a way, I don't know exactly how, that there's a major downside in this. That, I think, is the big challenge for American Jews, American Jewry, in the current time. It's not exactly an easy subject, and people shouldn't talk stupid, like you see on comments in these online things, in the Jewish online things. Don't talk stupid. You need something intelligent. Anyway, that's I'm just sharing you my 10 cents on this. That's why I see a trend in this. It may very well be, let me tell you something. The guy who pushed the Henry Ford stuff was a Russian. What was his name? Boris Brassel. He came over here and he mamish pushed heavily Yom HaValayla. You can Google him, Brassol. You'll see. And he persuaded the CIA or whatever the equivalent was at that time. You know, Jews are trying to take over America and this and that and the other. And nothing ever happened to him. You know? I don't believe anything ever happened to him. I think the Russians are doing it now also. Putin and those guys. They play double games. And I can't figure out all the twists and turns in their conspiracy operations. But Lee Biarmerly, they're very much a part of all this. Because it works. If you want to pull America apart, one way to do is promote racial discord in this kind of way. And the easiest group to go after is the Jews. The Arabs go into this with full participation because they figure this will bring an end to Israel. Let's at least in the time of Purim have at least a common sense to recognize who is Haman. Okay? Let's at least know who is Haman. I bet you at the time when Haman issued the decree from the palace of Ahasuerus, the Jews had no idea who the guy is. Not really. He hadn't done anything in the years that he had been prime minister until then to move against Claudius, or at least not, we're told. And then overnight, he issued a decree to kill everybody. And then the Jews knew who Haman is, okay? So I think we have much more evidence now of who our enemies are. Anyway, I just wanted to share that again. I want to thank Mishpachat Zemetzi. He let me let off some steam over here. And I wish everybody a good week.
For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidovidkatz.com.